episode of Millennial in the Middle. I'm Connor DeLynn, and today I'm about to play you an interview with a gentleman named Bobby Umar. And it is so cool that I was able to have him on the show today. I have followed Bobby on social media for a couple years now and been so impressed with his ability to talk about the importance of building a personal brand, using that to connect with people and how to network. He's got over 500,000 followers on Twitter. He was ranked recently as the second best business coach to follow on Twitter. He was top 7 networking guru to follow across social media. He's written 3 different books, including How to Network Anytime, Anywhere, with Anyone, and has recently started a company that helps people define their brands, discover what that is, find their own purpose, and then to actually go out and design a strategy to be able to put out content and get that message out there and deploy it, put it across all the different platforms that we have access to now. And some of the examples that he gives here in this interview of people that are winning in this new world, they're taking advantage of the opportunities they have to connect with people all over the world and are substantiating themselves as an influencer or a thought leader or subject matter expert in a certain field, no matter how niche that might be. And I have no doubt that this will only become more and more of a thing. This is where the future is headed, and he is a really good person to follow and to keep track of as we're trying to navigate what this new landscape looks like in the passion economy, gig economy, and all these different things we have rolling for us now. So again, I was really honored to have him on the show. I hope you enjoy this interview. If you want to follow him, LinkedIn, Twitter are his main spots to find him, but Instagram, he's everywhere else too. That's Bobby Umar, U-M-A-R. Thanks so much for listening. Here we go. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We've got a lot of good things to get into, and I've wanted to have you and introduce you to my audience for a little while now. So thanks so much for giving me an hour of your day.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out.
And you are coming from Toronto, right?
Toronto, home of the champion Raptors. Exactly.
There you go. Okay. So I love that. We got a Canadian guest on the show today coming from our neighbors.
How's it going, eh? So, okay.
That's right. In fact, you said it's good to be out. And I'm like, oh, he just gave it away right there. Like he said out like a Canadian.
Love it.
Well, here's where I want to start. On your LinkedIn bio, you said something just in the first couple lines that I think really resonated with me. And the reason being is I've heard so many young people say things similar to this recently. You said that as you were starting in like your career journey that you felt a little lost when it came to your path and your purpose. And I've had a lot of people say, you know, like, I just don't know what I want to do and where do my passions lie? So I'm curious to start there of how did you take that experience in your life and learn from it to where you are now?
Yeah, I think part of the challenge is that we're often told what to do by folks, you know, teachers, our parents, society, companies, leaders. But I think when you're young, it's hard for you to take ownership of the fact, oh, let me figure it out for myself. What is it I want to do? Do the research, dive into my personal brand, and figure that stuff out. So what happens is we often go on a path of success defined by other people, like those parents. I did engineering because my dad said engineering is a good trade. Okay, great. I'm good at math. Okay, good. Let me do that. And then I left that, started working in engineering, and I was like, well, I'm not really happy here. And then eventually I got let go. Because I just wasn't performing at my job because I honestly didn't care about it. I didn't like being in front of a computer all day. And so then I went to brand marketing. I thought, okay, you know what? I like working with people. Let me do that. So I did brand marketing, did that for 4 years. And again, still felt, you know, lost, still felt unfulfilled, still felt like I wasn't getting where I wanted to go to. And so it was a bit of a problem for me. And then finally, when I got let go again, I was like, man, you know what? And then someone said, why don't you go back to this? I was like, I don't want to go back to that. Like, what? And so that's when I actually took it into my own hands. I said, let me figure out what I want to do. Let me talk to people. Let me do interviews. Let me do some research. Let me do some personal assessment stuff. And after three to six months of this, I finally forged a path that made sense. And I was like, okay, here's something where, you know, I'm dealing with people, I'm nurturing, I'm persuading, influencing, I have diversity. This sounds like a really fun thing. And so I became a professional speaker and I never looked back. And that was 17 years ago. And that was great. So to me, the lesson is, I wish I had taken the time when I was younger to really dive deep in understanding myself and who I was and what drives me. Because, you know, I never did those assessment. I mean, I remember there was an assessment tool I did in high school that said, you know, what kind of job you might want to have, but it wasn't that, but it wasn't comprehensive. And so, you know, having did doing some more work and really figuring that stuff out, I wish I'd done it sooner, because, you know, I started my life in my 30s, like my current purposeful life. And I wish I'd done it earlier when I was in my teens.
Yeah. That's really interesting. It's so funny you brought up the career aptitude test.
Yeah, exactly.
We just talked about that on the last episode. And I think the other piece with that is, like, these old school career aptitude tests would maybe have, you know, 30 end answers. Like, there are 30 different careers or industries you could get in now. And that's just so antiquated, right? Like, there's so many opportunities and avenues to find fulfillment and do what you're good at. And I think that's interesting.
And
to
I have
see.
A funny,
you know, you wouldn't call,
I have a funny story. Yeah, I have a funny story about that, because so I remember this, the aptitude test I did in high school is called Choices. So I have a good memory, right? It's okay. Called Choices, and it ranked you on 15 different dimensions of, you know, your ideal career. And so they plugged in the computer, and I got zero results. And they said, okay, let's take away some of the lesser important dimensions. So now we went down to, like, 11 dimensions out of 15. Zero results. He's like, okay, you know, let's take a few more. And then we took the top eight of the 15 dimensions. And then all of a sudden this list of like 70 jobs came, from psychology to engineering to farmer to shoe salesman. I was like, what is the point of this? Because it didn't capture the fact that I was very unique, in the sense that super engineering math nerd, but also very creative artistic performer guy. And they kind of clashed. And that's why I couldn't figure out what I would be good at.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Let's talk through this concept. You said that, you know, you think a lot of young people just do what they're told, or like, we have this playbook that we're given, and it kind of takes a minute before I think we have a bit of an awakening to think through those things on our own and find what values matter to us. What do you feel like was the moment that you flipped that switch?
When I flipped that switch? Well, again, I think it's probably when I, having done the personal brand deep dive and validating from my network, you know, I put together a SurveyMonkey, and I remember sending it out to all these people that I knew, you know, across my different jobs or whatever it might be. And what happened was, there's about 100 people that answered, 100, I think 117 people answered it. And the things that everyone said that were the same were very validating and very powerful for me. It's like, oh, this is great. This is exactly what I want to hear. Because, you know, 10 people say this and 10 people say that and 20 people say this. But when 100 people say the same thing, that means a lot. And so for me, I thought that was actually incredibly important in terms of what I was trying to do. So once that happened, that was like, okay, you know what? This is coming together. These people are saying the same thing, and I'm totally seeing what they're saying. And because they came from all walks of my life, you know, some were people I worked with at summer camp, some were people that I were bosses, some people were my family. And when they all said the same thing and aligned, I was like, this makes sense. Now I have this path. And when I announced the fact that I was going to do motivational speaking, they're like, yes, that's it. And they all said this. I'm like, okay, great. Let's do this, man.
That's awesome. I love that thought too, of being able to go out and get feedback. Like, it's easier than ever to be able to test ideas or
crowdsource. Yeah, man.
And see what people say there. So let's dive into this kind of personal brand question now. You know, I often joke that, you know, to be a high schooler in 2022, it's like you've got to be your own PR manager. Yeah. We used to only think of PR as for politicians or for businesses or executives or whatever it might be. But now, legitimately, like, we all have a personal brand that can make a huge impact in both our professional and personal lives. So let's first start by just saying, like, what do you feel the importance of having a personal brand is now?
Well, I would say first off, everyone has a personal brand. So the importance is owning your brand, right? Leveraging your brand, managing your brand. Because the whole idea is that your brand is your reputation. It's your credibility. It's your integrity. So are you trying to build a reputation that's trustworthy, or are you building a reputation of being a lazy ass, you know, do no gooder, lying sack of whatever, right? Like, what exactly you want your brand to be? Because we know those people, right? I mean, in every school, high school, university, and in work, there's those people that you don't like, the do nothing people or the lazy make excuse type people,
yeah.
and you don't want to be that person. So, you know, the thing is your reputation and how you, and I always explain it to how people experience you and how memorable you are, right? Do they remember the good things? Do they remember the bad things? Do they remember both? What exactly do they remember about you? And so that's something you want to manage. If you find out from your feedback network that, oh, you're always late, then maybe you want to change the fact that you're always late. If you find out that you're a bit aggressive or you're a bit too quiet, then maybe you want to like learn to be a better speaker, learn to actually listen to people better and try to, you know, improve yourself as a person, because that reputation builds connection, it builds trust, it builds opportunities. And if you have a really, really strong brand, next thing you know, instead of you having to reach out to people, people reach out to you.
Yeah. I think that's really well said. Like, we can't avoid the fact that we have a personal brand.
Right.
Like, that is what it is. But I think defining that for us and then trying to, you know, I think it's hard because you can't handle how people perceive you, right? Like, that's something you don't have a whole lot of control of, but you do have a control of what you do and what you put out
yeah.
there. How have you been able to find that balance as you've worked with people?
In terms of putting stuff out there? I mean, you know, like, is that what you mean? What do you mean by that?
Really, I think it's this difference of like trying to control, maybe the wrong word, but have an influence on the way you're perceived and what people view your brand as.
Well, I think the first thing is to speak up, right? So, I mean, as a speaker myself, I'm very comfortable sharing my opinion and talking about things, whether I'm talking about my favorite board game or my favorite movie, but or my favorite political social justice issue. I think being able to speak and communicate. You know, there was a study done long ago saying that the number one tool that, you know, CEOs were looking for were communication skills, right? You look at the bad managers and the good managers, the good leaders, and the bad leaders. The ones that can communicate well and effectively are the ones that create that impact for themselves and others. So communication skills and being a better speaker, being a better storyteller, which leads to better content and putting stuff out there. When I tweet something, it gets attention because I articulate in a way that gets people's attention, makes them think and wants them to reply. So I think young people that work on their communication skills, I think that goes a long way to, you know, at least getting started, because you have to put in the work to develop yourself as a better person. I mean, I've had to learn over the years from moving from, you know, being the networking guy at live events to now how am I a digital networking guy, because with the advent of LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, you name it, all these different platforms, I had to learn how to do that. And so I was willing to take it on because I saw the importance of it. Other people, they resist. You know, I'm very open to evolving on across different platforms. Still haven't done TikTok yet, but it's imminent. It's imminent. I'm going to be.
It's coming.
Well, because, you know, like everyone's like, Bobby, you got to be on TikTok. You like make 1 minute videos. Like, you're the guy. You should be on there talking about this stuff. I'm like, yeah, you know, you're right. So I haven't done that yet, but it's coming. So, you know, I'm learning to evolve too. But I think communication is a huge part of that success factor for a lot of people.
I think that's really well said of, you know, being able to communicate what you're trying to say. And I think that then takes that, even if we're going to peel one layer back, like, how would you advise young people if they're trying to decide, what do I want my brand to represent? And what is my story? What sets me apart? Is there anything you would say to that?
Well, I mean, the thing is to do the work. I mean, I think most people, 90% of people don't want to do the work. They want the shortcut. Like, I can tell you that yeah. every single person I've worked with or every single person I've spoken to, they want the shortcut answer and solution. They don't want to do the work. The truth is it takes work. It's like when you're working on your resume, they say it takes hours, like maybe a dozen hours to put together a really good resume. And then you have to keep editing and evolving that resume over years as you get experience. It's the same with your brand. Diving deep into understanding your true brand takes time and energy. You have to survey people. You have to do your own self-assessment. You have to do online assessments. You have to analyze. You have to document it, put it in a Google Doc and look at all the similarities and the threads. And it takes time. Well, maybe work with a coach, take a course, whatever. It takes time to do it. And so, you know, I have a model that I use, which is basically, it's the DYPP model, which is you discover your personal brand, then you design your personal brand, then you deploy your personal brand. And most people are stuck in design their personal brand. They're looking at the strategies, the tactics, the assets. They're coming with a plan, what they're going to do, but it's not based on the discovery. It's based on a little bit of what they know and what they've heard. And so it's about 40 to 60% effective. And so when they deploy their personal brand out there, you know, whether it's a job search, 2 years later, they're like, you know what? I'm not having the fulfillment that I wanted. Or they launch a digital marketing strategy. And 6 months later, like, you know, I'm not getting the results I wanted with my digital marketing. And so if you go back and you do the discovery part, identify your values, your skills, your interests, your superhero strengths, what people love about you, what they hate about you, the stories of your life that impact you, and you come up with a clear, purposeful, directional brand that has a clear target, a clear purpose, then when you design that personal brand that to put out there, it's far more focused, far more targeted, 85, 95%. And then what do you think happens when you deploy? Way, way greater impact. And so I think the biggest thing that people don't do, 90% of people don't do the work. They don't do the discovery part. They're always in design mode and deploy, design, deploy, design, deploy. No, no, discover. And the other thing that happens is, you know, 2 to 5 years later, you got to do it again because you change. Like, you know, the way I was as a young person versus older person, you know, changes. So you have to keep looking at that. Not, I don't change entirely, but, you know, we can have massive things that happen in our life that change our perspective on a lot of things. So I think that discovery piece is essential. And a lot of young people should take the time to do it and realize it takes time. But what I say to young people is this, you know, are you willing to invest 100 hours of your time in order to have 500,000 hours of fulfillment, purpose, legacy, story, and impact? Because if you are, and you want to be joyful, you want to be happy, you want to be fulfilled, then that 100 hours is nothing compared to the 500,000 hours, which is like, you know, 50 years. That's what you want to do.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's so well said. And it really tracks my story in a lot of ways. Like, I'm resonating as you're saying that. Because, I mean, I was young, I got out there. And so what did I do? I didn't quite know who I was or what my message was going to be. So I just deploy, deploy, deploy and see what works and try to feel it out.
But you know what's interesting about that, if I may say? There's people who do and there's people who analyze, right? Yeah. And you got to do both. There's people who are doing, 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 but they're not learning, learning, learning and reforming and recalibrating and whatever. There's other people who are just like analyzing and doing, over-analyzing, thinking, or not doing anything. You got to do both. So I'm glad that you were doing, but also analyzing and coming up with what you want to do.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. For me, I had an awakening in 2020. We've heard this from a lot of different people, is like life slowed down,
yeah.
We were bored for a second, and we had the chance to put in some work if we chose that. And what did we find fulfillment with? And what did we want to be? You know, it's interesting. That's when this podcast came about for me and becoming more succinct in what I really cared about, what I was passionate about, and why I was going to put out content in the first place, but, you know, ultimately to make some sort of a difference in people's lives. And I really like that process, specifically in the deploy part of this. A lot of that has to do now with content creation. And so, you know, you said all these different platforms out there and TikTok, like, it can be daunting or overwhelming to just like start putting out content, or the moment that video goes into selfie mode, yeah. Like it's scary. What advice would you give to people that are just starting putting out their content to the world?
Well, I think that number one, you need to be really clear on who your target is, right? So who's your target audience? What are you trying to do? Like, I mean, obviously there's objective, there's purpose, there's target audience, but your target audience makes a big difference, right? So, you know, if I'm doing, let's say I want to build an influencer brand as a fitness athlete, you know, a fitness person, sure. Right? Then obviously places like TikTok and Instagram and even Pinterest are great places to build those brands because it's a very visual experience. And so you want to create those videos. Mm-hmm. But maybe you're B2B. And so you want to, build a business based on some sort of like special software, then maybe LinkedIn's a better place to be. So I think that the first thing is to know your target audience, because that's going to determine the strategy around the platform that you're going to use, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, what are your assets? What are you really good at? So for me as a speaker, video content is the way to go. Other people are good writers. You know, fine, you can be a storyteller, a writing storyteller, and maybe you're blogging, and that's your strategy. So you have to figure out, you know, using your assets, what's the best way to go. So I think so you start with your target, then you start with, you know, what you're going to do. And then the other thing is, if you know your target audience, you should be really clear on what are the things that what are their pain points, what are their bliss points, what are the biggest questions that they're asking, what are the things that keep them up at night, because that's what's going to drive your content. You're going to answer those questions. And I will say one thing about content, it doesn't matter how old you are, right? Because content is one of the biggest paths to thought leadership, right? If you want to be seen as a thought leader in your field, no matter what age you are, you can be a thought leader. there's a guy I know. He analyzes smartphones. Every single time a smartphone comes up, he analyzes it and, you know, gives it a rating, whatever. And he does videos on YouTube. And he has 8 million subscribers. He's probably 24 years old, right? But that's good. But he's done that because he's built it up and he's niched into something very specific. And he continues to churn out the content. And that demonstrates his authority, demonstrates his expertise. It starts conversations and it builds that brand. So, you know, and the last thing I'll say is that, you know, just start. Like, you know, just start.
Yeah.
Put stuff out there, say something, whether it's a tweet, it's a video, it's an image, it's a post, it's text, and then people get feedback and people start commenting. And next thing you know, they start engaging. Next thing you know, you start to get feedback. You start honing your brand as you're doing it. Don't wait until your brand's perfect. Wait, do everything at once. You work on the brand and you put content out there all at the same time. Don't be like do and analyze at the same time as you're moving down the path. But a lot of people, the biggest issue is they just don't start.
Yeah. I love that. And if you're real and authentic along the way, people will like following your journey and they'll be okay with the fact that it evolves and that you have, you know, found things that you resonate with more than others. So I think that takes a little bit of the pressure off. A question I get quite a bit and I have faced, I'm sure you've been asked it, is this difference between, like, a lot of people are like, oh, my social media, that's for my friends and family, and this is a personal thing. So if I'm all of a sudden going to start putting out content as a potential thought leader, do I need a new account? Should I be like business Connor here and then personal Connor here? Or should those two be merged?
What do you think? My general take is that your entire lifetime legacy thought leadership brand is the one you. That's it. Now, if you want to have a LinkedIn company page, you want to have an Instagram business account, you want to have a Twitter business, yeah, you can do those things. But remember, you are the greatest asset of your life, and you are the overall arching umbrella of the thought leadership brand of who you are. So I would focus on the one thing. Now, you know, you talk about this personal social thing. Well, you know, like you could mix things up. You know, you could have, for example, Snapchat just for your friends. You can have Instagram for your business. And that's fine. You can totally do that. But I think generally speaking, though, you want to have that one account, which is interesting because I've been thinking about TikTok. And I've actually been thinking about making TikTok my one, just a creative outlet only and not do all my professional videos. I was just thinking of using it for singing and dancing, like singing. I'm a singer, actually. No, I'm a singer, right? And I love to sing all the time. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't have an outlet where I can just sing stuff all the time. It's like, you know, maybe I can just do that on TikTok and go, hell, okay, that's weird. But, you know, because it's still part of my brand. It still feeds in the overall brand of who I am.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that having the one thing is the way to go. It's way more exhausting to try to do multiple things. Be who you are. I mean, you know, different platforms are different things. I mean, you know, Twitter is where I talk about anything I want, right? And Facebook is where I talk about my family and then, you know, other things that are important to me. LinkedIn is more professional. There's a little bit of personal in every platform, but, you know, you have to like, but again, they're still all me. It's always me at the beginning and end of it.
Yeah. I think that's really good because a lot of us look at these types of outlets as like, well, how do we put ourselves out there? What are we going to be able to say or do? But at the end of the day, just be you. And I think it's an old school mentality to like really put up these barriers of these different parts of us. Like we have our work life and then we have our home life and then we have our friends. And now I think especially these younger generations are like, no, bring your whole authentic self to the workplace, to your home, and there doesn't need to be a different you in those spots. In fact, if there is, you're probably missing out on
small. Yeah, and plus it's very exhausting, right? Being someone that you're not. I remember when I was working in the corporate space, they did some sort of analysis, like a personal self-assessment piece. And one of the things I learned was that there's like four colors, red, orange, green, and yellow. And yellow was my personality, you know, personality plus. Okay, fine, that was great there. Red was that aggressive nature. And what they found was my standard aggressive nature was, you know, 60%. But and a serve nature. But at work, I ramped it up to 90% because I felt like I had to. And what that means is I was acting in a way that I didn't feel like myself. And that's why it wasn't as fun for me. And so, you know, we do this all the time. And so it's way more fun to be who you are and build a life and impact on your authentic, real nature of your story.
I think that's really well said. And I've taken that same test and I'm the same way. Like I was split between red and yellow and I'm really yellow when I'm with my friends, and I can really go into red serious mode when I need to there. And I think, you know, part of that process is just finding that balance and finding where do you feel in your comfort zone. You know, obviously we want to grow our comfort zone, but how do we find who we are and authentically just be that person?
Yeah, and we can't do that if we don't do the analysis and don't put stuff out there. Like, those two things are really important. Doing the work, like putting stuff out there and doing the deep dive work, those things together will go a long way. And there's some people who do neither. And so they basically float around life and wonder what happened to them when they're 40 living in their parents' basement. So, you know.
Yeah. Right on. There's a lot of voices out there in the world now, right? Like, there's more content than ever. There's a lot of noise. And you hear the phrase a lot, thought leader, that I know, you know, you've mentioned here, and it's something you talk about quite a bit. First off, maybe to those who are listening, like, what would you define as a thought
leader? Well, a thought leader basically is somebody who is known for their expertise or their authority because of the stuff that they talk about. Mm-hmm. They're the people that everyone looks to for advice. They're the people that are driving conversations. They're the people that are mentioned when a topic comes up. So, you know, my hope is when people think of personal branding, they think of Bobby. When they think of something else, they think of somebody else. So, you know, and there's always this expression, personal brand is what they say when you're not in the room. I always say a thought leadership brand is what they say before you enter the room, when you enter the room, and when you leave the room, because they're talking about you before and after as well. So being a thought leader is being known and recognized for that stuff. So for me, that's what thought leadership is. You get a clear personal brand, and you build that thought leadership brand in many ways, through your relationships, through your content, through your speaking, the things you say, the things you do, the people you know, your activities, your actions, your experience. These all build your thought leadership brand. But it's about, to me, like, having a clear personal brand creates a more focused thought leadership brand. Because if you want to be, you can't be a thought leader in like 20 different topics, right? You want to pick that one, two, or three that you really want to focus on. But that's how thought leadership is defined.
I like that. With a thought leader generally, what would you say it takes to get to that point where other people see you as that? Like, you can't just come out and tell people you're a thought leader. There's a side of that that's earned. And so how have you seen that process of people maybe going from the beginning and then getting to a point where they do have some thought leadership and are looked at that way before they...
Yeah, I would say that there's, when you look at thought leaders, I'll name people like Malala Yousafzai, Brené Brown, Beyonce, Oprah, Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, Bill Gates. These are all thought leaders in their fields for different reasons. Now, there's three criteria that they have that go well for them. Number one is people. So they have broad relationships, they have deep friendships, and they have lots of followers. The more you work on all three of those types of connections, the more likely you'll be able to build thought leadership. Now, that by itself is what's called an influencer, but not necessarily a thought leader. Influencer is part of being a thought leader. The second piece of thought leadership is driving new ideas, innovating new content. So Beyonce's writing songs, and Oprah's writing books, and Gary Vaynerchuk is doing videos, and Malala's speaking on panels and putting herself out there. Putting those ideas out there to drive the conversation is a really huge part of it as well. You can't just sit on your laurel and write that book 20 years ago and that's it. No, you got to keep evolving and learning. And then the third piece is constantly working on your communication skills. So these people are learning to speak better, write better, listen better, have more empathy, and they continually work on that stuff so that they can create greater connections, greater relationships, and build that. So the thought leaders that are out there, they're doing those three things. And if you keep doing those three things on a consistent basis, and you do it with passion, integrity, confidence, and focus, you can build up a thought leadership brand. And sometimes you can do it quite quickly. I mean, some people, you know, I worked with one person. She had a very niche one, which was, I want to build urban balcony gardens is what her big thing was. And it was so unique, but you know, we were able to build her as a thought leader in like 6 weeks because she was posting content all the time and no one else was. And next thing you know, people are seeing her as one.
Man, I love that you have kind of the behind the scenes of this, because I've talked a lot lately about the passion economy, and you said it, right? Like, and that example is such a good example of someone in the passion economy that, you know, is saying, hey, look, for an urban garden that's out there on your balcony, I'm the person. And she's been able to turn that into, you know, a substantial, I'm guessing, revenue stream in lots of different ways. Like, talk to me about just like how exciting that really is.
Well, exciting. It's exciting because, you know, once you have that niche and you have that expertise or I guess the recognition as a thought leader, then people come to you, and that's when you get media opportunities, you get speaking gigs, you get people reaching out to you with questions. Pretty soon you're consulting, pretty soon you're charging higher fees. Like, there's so much stuff that happens with that. You know, I have another friend of mine, and she worked at a bank, you know, for many, many years, but then eventually she decided to tell her story of domestic abuse and domestic abuse of arranged marriages as she moved from Pakistan to Canada. And that became her big story. She told all the time. And next thing you know, that became what she niched down on, talking about domestic abuse with cross-cultural gaps and things like that. And now she's speaking all around the world on just that one topic. But because she's talking about it all the time, it's growing really, really well for her. So I think there's a moment where you start getting, to me, the moment is when people reach out to you about this stuff, right? I remember years ago when I launched my digital strategy, I remember this because I did my first TEDx talk. I remember March 5th, 2011. I was like, I'm going to launch a Facebook page, launch a newsletter, launch my Twitter strategy, launch my LinkedIn strategy. And then 6 months into it, I was tweeting maybe a couple of times per day, okay, just about stuff, about leadership and whatnot. And then someone reached out to me. It was an autism group. And they said, hey, Bobby, we love your stuff. Can you come and do a training for our team on leadership and engagement? And I was like, oh, yeah, for sure I can. I couldn't believe that they reached out to me. At that time, I had like 5,000 followers on Twitter. I now have 500,000. But I had 5,000 followers in 6 months. And they loved my stuff. And I was like, this is great. And I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to keep doing this and keep investing in social media because it builds so much awareness and amplification that people will then reach out to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that as far as the awareness and application, because that's what makes the passion economy work too, right? Like, no niche is too small because you have the whole, you know, world out there. You might not end up getting 1 million followers if all you do is talk about urban balconies, but you could create a great source of income, a great way to go about doing that. And I think that the opportunities now that are available, just
there are people out there who built a lifetime of business and revenue with 12 clients. Like, it can be done. Yeah. You don't need to have 1,000 followers and millions of followers. I mean, for me, I would trade in my 500,000 on Twitter for 1,000 rabid, crazy fans of everything that I do. That's all I need.
It's so well put, because so often we focus on the number, right? Like, oh, how many people are following you, this or that? But no, I mean, that the concept of 100 right, true exactly. fans, right? Like, if you have those true fans that are committed, and then being able to be creative and keeping them a part of your journey, I really, really think is exciting. How do you feel, as you've worked with people that are thought leaders, there's a difference between generations? So I know that you've worked with people of all sorts of different ages. You know, Gen Z was raised with social media. It's second nature to them. To take a selfie is not a big deal. Where a baby boomer, it's going to be different. What have you seen as some generational differences?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, like I work with boomers who, you know, had trouble adopting the technology. And then you have me, I'm Gen X, which is basically digital adapters. We had to learn, right? We had to learn. Whereas then you have millennials below who are digital natives and they grew up with this stuff. And now, of course, you have, you know, Gen Z, and they like my son, he knows way more than I know about lots of things, you know, about Discord and all those different things. So, but I think the thing that's really important to keep in mind among all the different generations is what you learn, right? So there are boomers and Gen X who refuse to learn about the new technologies and things like that, and that makes them fall behind. Similarly, there are Gen Z and millennials who don't learn about the other generations and learning how to communicate with them and how to position themselves with those people. Because if boomers and Gen Z are boomers and Gen X are hiring Gen Zs, they need to know how to talk to them at an interview. They need to understand that stuff. And so I think the biggest gap amongst all the generations is learning about the other generations and how they work, but also how the world works. Because the way I see it, and this is the futurist in me, you know, talking, technology is moving faster than most of us can keep up. Even young people. And so what will happen is there's going to be that 20% of people who are on top of the technology and what's going on, whether it's Web3 and all the different things that are going on. And I struggle with this sometimes. I'm trying to learn. I'm learning about NFTs. I'm learning about these things. They're the top 20% are going to be able to be far and ahead of everybody else who's going to fall behind. It's like the old, you know, grandpa or grandma in my day, they say, oh, they can't program the VCR. Now it's like, oh, they can't even set up their laptop, or they can't even set up their digital, you know, their podcast like you have. So, you know, we have to stay on top of these things and continue to learn. And if you continue to learn about how the world is and also how the people in the world are different than you, that's where you can make a huge impact.
And you're speaking my language. I love that, because it's so true of that. The main cause of the gap is an unwillingness to think that, well, maybe there is a better way, or at least a different way. And I think there's very much a mindset from both sides, from the, you know, younger and older group of, no, we have it all figured
and
out.
And I have an interesting story for you too, which is interesting. So my son, he's a Gen Z, and we got him a tutor, and you know, and she's young too. She's probably also Gen Z, or maybe a younger millennial. And she was working with him on putting together a calendar and to manage his time and his priorities, whatever. And he finally told her that, you know, I don't think Google Calendar is going to work for me. And I applaud his courage for saying that, because I think a lot of young people think that, well, they should just be on the Uber of all the technology and use that. And instead, he turned to the old-fashioned journal, like a calendar with dates and stuff. And I never thought him to do that either. But that's what he's doing, and it's working for him. And I applaud his courage, because he's realized that, you know what? Sometimes, even though he calls himself a digital tech guy because he loves the tech, but he's like, when it comes to managing his time, he doesn't like using Google calendars or whatever. He prefers to have a book and it's all laid out for him. And okay, you know what? All power to you, man. That's old school, but do it, man. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there isn't just one path, right? There isn't just one way of doing things or one correct answer. And I think, you know, the younger generations, kudos to your son, are more willing to say, there's lots of ways to solve this puzzle, right? And also an acceptance of other people that do it different than you, that, hey, that's okay, and bring those different ideas. And in fact, it's that sort of diversity that's leading to better conversations and that progress happening even faster. Speaking of diversity, I just brought it up, like, how do you feel it's important in organizations to have these different mindsets, both generationally, culturally, to come together?
Well, we know that diversity of thought and diversity of people and diversity of experience will lead to more diversity of action. And so being more open, being more flexible, being able to evolve and innovate more quickly. So I think having diverse opinions, having diverse people, having diverse experiences and stories that are shared with an organization is what's going to help us innovate and evolve in a better way than other organizations. The ones that are just all one type, they're not going to be able to innovate as quickly as the one that has the diverse group of people. So I'm all for it. I think diversity is something that we don't realize how powerful it is, whether it's in our teams or whether it's in our communities or whether it's even in our own kind of in our schools and our groups of friends. Like I see, you know, young people getting together just with their own kind, and I think they should talk to other people. And my son likes video games, likes chess and Rubik's Cube, but you know, it's good to talk to people that are outside of that, because you want to diversify your overall experience.
Well said. So let's talk about this. What is Bobby up to now? Like, I know you have your hands in a lot of different pots, and we talked about where you came from.
That's a good question. I mean, it's more about where do I want to spend my time, right? So I typically work on a couple of projects. Number one, of course, is always speaking and training. So I'm going to companies doing training. And nowadays, here's what's in it. When the pandemic hit, you know, I lost all my speaking gigs for a whole year. And so I had to figure out what I want to do now. I started doing more coaching. So now I do a lot of coaching on career transition and business development and brand thought leadership, brand building. So that's one thing I do. But the speaking is coming back. So now I'm pitching to speak and train them on LinkedIn. And digital is really hot right now. Digital and digital storytelling is really hot right now. So teaching about teaching about LinkedIn, Twitter, social audio. That's something that I'm doing a lot of. The second thing, of course, is the coaching piece. So coaching piece on people on transition and building a thought leadership brand, how to actually get clarity in a personal brand, build a thought leadership brand. That to me is another one. And the third thing I'm doing actually is I'm running a new company, because my two companies during the pandemic crashed. And then I started a third company. The other two are still around. They're now back building up. But I started a third company, which is called the Thought Leadership Brand Club. And so what I do now is I help individuals take their brand journey wherever they are and help them build a thought leadership brand on whatever platforms they want. But we have a community there where we actually share articles and we do calls and we answer questions, and we basically help people get to that next level, because I now believe in the power of community, because a rising tide lifts all boats and we all rise together. So that to me is my other big project that I'm working on, the Thought Leadership Brand Club.
I love businesses that are built around the mindset of an abundance mentality, right? Like, if you focus on helping other people,
absolutely,
win, you can't help but win yourself. And I really, you know, kudos to you for all that you're doing. For those that are listening to this podcast and maybe are saying, you know, I would like some help in building a personal brand or how to get started, or maybe I'm at a point where I've plateaued and I'm looking to take it to the next level, how can they find you? And what's the
You can find me just by Googling me, because I'm everywhere. But generally speaking, my website is dypb.ca, which is Discover Your Personal Brand, dypb.ca. And then there's a Thought Leadership Brand Club. That's another place. And then, of course, I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, soon to be TikTok. But for now, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram are my three biggest places you can find me.
Cool. Well, go give Bobby a follow. I definitely appreciate what you're doing and just helping people tell their story and get more positive things out there in the world with more opportunity than to do it ever before. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Is there anything in closing
you'd
like to say?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you have a chance to fight for the life that you want to live, right? So if you want to fight for the career that you want to fight for the life that you want, where you live, who you love, the things you want to do. And a lot of us are too focused on what people say we can't do. But if you actually take ownership of your life and put stuff out there and ask for help, trust me, people like myself and you will be there to help you along the way. So just fight for that life that you want, and we will be there to help you get there.
Really cool. I love that. Bobby, you made a What's mistake that? In this podcast. You told me that you're a singer. So, and so I told you, you know, I end every song with a show, but now that that cat's out of the bag, I feel like you're going to have to join me from Canada if you know the Steelers.
Well, I know the main chorus there.
Well, I'll start it off.
Jokers to the right.
Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
It is,
it's
right?
Hard to do with the echo, but it was almost like we did it in a round.
There was an echo. That was fantastic.
Oh, man. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I guess I don't do most of my interviews in Canada. Maybe it was a little further to get over there. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining. Appreciate your time. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Go give Bobby a follow. Clowns to the left.